It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Yeah. Well, hello, everybody. Hello. You're tuned in to 2A Radio, the biggest, baddest, best, meanest, coolest Second Amendment dedicated radio show in the country, coast to coast and online. You can always stream at 2aradio.com. Matter of fact, all of the archives are available on the archives page at 2aradio.com. Additionally, you can always get a hold of me through my email address, which is bill@2aradio.com. 2A, not two-way. Some people confuse that as though there's a two-way radio. It's a one-way radio. I'm talking, you're listening, one way. It's 2A's and Second Amendment. We don't talk just about the Second Amendment on this show. We talk about all of our rights. We talk about political corruption. We talk about different things that are going on in the country when it comes to guns and rights and, quite honestly, fighting back against tyrannical things that different government officials or, you know, the entire United States Congress might be doing, whatever it is. We talk about it. We talk about, you know, this healthcare overhaul wannabe. We talk about immigration, gun rights, First Amendment rights, and where a lot of people really misinterpret these things. For instance, rights are a guarantee between you and your government. That's what is a right is a guarantee to. It's not a right between you and somebody else. If you want to walk into my house and start talking about some sort of a political diatribe that just comes forth, I can tell you, you know what, not in my house. I can subvert your First Amendment right to freedom of speech in my house. Who cannot do that is a government official. As well, who cannot do that is a place of a public accommodation. Like, let's say, your favorite super center, where you can go in for groceries or your a new belt or pair of shoes. You can't just go into any private establishment that has restrictions on who can come in and come out and do whatever you want with your rights. However, a public accommodation, the open streets, or a business which is open to the general public, that sort of thing, well, those folks really cannot subvert your rights, which is commonly something that happens with only your Second Amendment rights. You may go into a grocery store, which is open to anybody that wants to go in there and spend money. And if you carry a gun, they might say, oh, we don't want you to carry a gun in here. They're now subverting your Second Amendment right. Would they be able to tell you you can't go on your political diatribe in this store? No, they cannot. They'd be violating your rights. That's been proven in many, many court cases, so they don't do it anymore. But yet they're still willing to say you can't bring your gun in here to protect yourself? Okay, you're taking away my right, my inalienable God-given right to self-protection, guaranteed in the Constitution and upheld by the Supreme Court more than once to carry this gun for self-protection. You're telling me I can't do it? Well, then you better provide me a suitable substitute. These are the types of things we talk about here on 2A Radio. All right? So, we've got a hell of a show coming at you today. So, stay tuned. We've got plenty coming. If you'd like to send me any emails or comments on the show, please do. Bill@2aradio.com. We'll be right back right after these words. Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back. All right, guys, welcome back. I have this piece, which is written by a psychotherapist. It says, so what's the matter with Obama? Conservatives have been asking this question for some time. Even some liberals are starting to wonder. James Carville railed about Obama's blasé attitude after the catastrophic oil spill. It's not a spill, it's a flow. The New York Times' Maureen Dowd revamped Obama's Yes We Can motto into Will We Ever. The liberal women of the TV show The View have expressed sympathy for Michelle Obama's living with a man so out of touch. Peggy Noonan, hardly a vehement Obama foe, recently pronounced him disconnected. Obama's odd mannerisms intrigue a psychotherapist like me. He also presents a serious diagnostic challenge. For one, Obama's teleprompter and the men behind the BlackBerry keep him well scripted. We know so little about the facts of his life. But it's more than just a lack of information. Obama himself is a strange bird. He doesn't fit easily into any diagnostic category. Many people attribute Obama's oddness to his narcissism. True, Obama has a gargantuan ego, and he is notoriously thin-skinned. Yet a personality disorder, like narcissism, does not explain Obama's strangeness. His giggling while being asked about the economy, his continued shout-out rather than announcing the Fort Hood shootings, or his vacations, golfing, partying, and fundraising during the calamitous oil spills. Take also Obama's declaring on the Today Show that he wants to know whose ass to kick. Consummate narcissists would never stoop to this vulgar display of adolescent machoism. Obama is flat when passion is needed. He's aggressive when savvy is required. What's most worrisome is that Obama doesn't even realize that his behavior is inappropriate. So if it's not just simple narcissism, what is wrong with Obama? Since I've never evaluated him, I can't say for sure, but I can hazard some educated guesses. Again, this is a psychotherapist who wrote this piece. If I saw a client as disconnected as him, the first thing I would wonder, is something wrong with his brain? And I'd consider the following theoretical diagnostic possibilities. Physical problems. There are a multitude of psychological conditions that can cause people to act strangely. For instance, head injuries, endocrine disturbances, epilepsy, and toxic chemical exposure. It makes me wonder, did Obama ever have a head injury? His stepfather in Indonesia was purportedly an alcoholic abuser. Was Obama subject to any physical abuse? Drugs and alcohol. Damage to the brain from drugs and alcohol can also cause significant cognitive impairments. Obama once said that there were 57 states and didn't correct himself. Memory problems can be caused by both illicit and prescription drug use. Obama admits a history of drug use in his youth. Did his usage cause some damage? Does Obama still use? Asperger's syndrome, also known as high-functioning autism. Asperger causes defects in social skills. A person with Asperger's can't read social cues. Consequently, he can be as insensitive and hurtful without even knowing it. Could Obama have Asperger's? He might have some mild traits, but certainly not the full-blown disorder. In contrast to Obama, those with Asperger's get fixated on some behavior, like programming computers. Obama lacks this kind of passion and zeal. How about mental illness? Obama's family tree is replete with the unbalanced. His maternal great-grandmother committed suicide. His grandfather, Stanley Dunham, was particularly unhinged. He was expelled from high school for punching his principal, named his daughter Stanley because he wanted a boy, and exposed young Barry to not just drunken trash talk, but unrestricted visits with alleged pedophile Frank Marshall Davis, who might or might not be Obama's biological father. Barack Sr. was an abusive alcoholic bigamist. Since mental illness runs in the family, does Obama have any signs? Yes and no. No, he is not schizophrenic, babbling about Martians. But there are red flags for some other conditions. While Obama doesn't appear to hallucinate, he seems to have delusions. He believes he has a messiah-like special gift which smacks of grandiose delusions. His externalizing all blame to conservatives, George W. Bush, or the racist boogeyman, hints at persecutory delusions. Along with the delusional disorder, Obama may fit a mild psychotic disorder called schizopal disorder. It may explain some of Obama's oddness. People with schizopal disorder hold bizarre beliefs, are suspicious and paranoid, and have inappropriate and constricted affect. They have few close friends and are socially awkward. A schizopal is someone like your strange cousin Becky, who is addicted to astrology, believes she is a psychic and is the oddball at social gatherings. Schizopal disorder does ring some bells vis-a-vis Obama. One way that the diagnosis doesn't fit, however, is that schizopals are generally harmless, odd ducks. Not so with Obama. How about trauma? My guts tell me that Obama was seriously traumatized in childhood. His mother disregarded his basic needs, dragged him all over the place, and ultimately abandoned him. But I think there may be something more insidious in his family background. While I can't prove it, the degree of Obama's disconnect reminds me of sexually abused clients. With serious sexual abuse, the brain chemistry may change. The child disassociates, that is, disconnects from his being, in order to cope. Many adult survivors still disassociate from occasional trances to the most extreme cases of multiple personality disorder. Apparently, young Barry was left in the care of communist Frank Marshall Davis, who had admitted to molesting a 13-year-old girl. As a teenager, Obama wrote a disturbing poem, Pop, that invokes images of sexual abuse. For instance, describing dual amber stains on both his and Pop's shorts. Would trauma explain Obama's disconnect? In many ways, yes. A damaged and unattached child may develop a false self. To compensate for the enormous disaffect in identity and attachment, the child invests his own personality. For Obama, it may have been a special, gifted person. Let's return now to my original question. What is wrong with Obama? My guess is a great deal. The answer is complex and likely includes some combination of the above. Along with the brain issues are personality disorders, narcissism, paranoia, passive aggressiveness. There's even a possibility of the most destructive character defect of all, an antisocial personality. Untreated, abuse can foster antisocial traits, especially among boys. If my assessment is accurate, what does this mean? It means that liberals need to wake up and spit out the Kool-Aid, and that conservatives should put aside differences, band together, and elect as many Republicans as possible. Because Obama will not change, he will not learn from his mistakes. He will not grow and mature from on-the-job experience. In fact, over time, Obama will likely become a more ferocious version of who he is today. Why? Because this is a damaged person. Obama's fate was sealed years ago growing up with his strange and poisonous family. Later on, his empty vessel was filled with the hateful bile of men like Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers. Obama will not evolve. He will not rise to the occasion. He will not become the man he was meant to be. This is for one reason and one reason alone. He is not capable of it. Very interesting. Very interesting. This written by a psychotherapist. I have to tell you, I read that and I just thought that to be worthy of broadcasting. Now, an appeals panel is considering whether Obama's even American, and the case challenges eligibility for failure to provide honest-to-God proof of citizenship. Three judges on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals are beginning to review a case that alleges Barack Obama is not eligible to be president and may not even be American. The federal court case brought by attorney Mario Apuzzo on behalf of plaintiffs Charles Kirchner and others has been dismissed at the district court level. Arguments earlier had been scheduled for June 29th in the dispute, but a court order recently canceled the hearing and has said announced the case would be decided based on the merits of the legal briefs submitted by attorneys. Kind of odd. A document from court clerk Marshall Waldron says the case will be decided by Judge Dolores Solvater, who was appointed by Jimmy Carter, Marianne Trump Barry, appointed by Bill Clinton, and Thomas Hardiman, appointed by George W. Bush. The filings were due on the day of the hearing. The filings were due on the day the hearing would have been held, but no pushable timetable for a decision to be released. The case argues Obama probably is not even a U.S. citizen, much less a natural-born citizen, as required by the U.S. Constitution of the chief executive officer. On a blog dealing with the case, lead plaintiff Kirchner has delivered updates. The case filed was against Obama, Congress, and others just before Obama was sworn into office. The case is argued under the British Nationality Act of 1948. His father was a British subject/citizen and not a U.S. citizen, and Obama himself was a British subject/citizen at the time Obama was born. We further contend that Obama has failed to even conclusively prove that he is at least a citizen of the United States under the 14th Amendment, as he claims by conclusively proving that he was born in Hawaii. Well, those are arguments that have been claimed. More to come after the break, guys. Stay tuned. This keeps on a rolling. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on Two-Way Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio are back.
Welcome back, everyone. I want to let you know there are some new federally mandated tests that you're going to have to take in order to buy a newspaper. And you're also going to have to take religion classes before you're allowed to attend churches. Now, if you already buy newspapers, you are not grandfathered in. You're going to have to go through literacy tests. And if you already practice your religion, you're still going to have to go to government-mandated religion classes before you can go back. Now, the Democrats might be right. It's obvious that Americans have become a very stupid group of people. Our schools have they just disgorge students who fall into the bottom of the barrel in literacy, math, and science scores. And late-night comedians have no lack for citizens on the street that have no clue about law or history. And as voters, we've been stupid enough to elect people like James Traficant, John Edwards, Robert KKK Byrd, Benedict Arlen Specter over and over again, Pete Stark, and for that matter, Jimmy Carter and Obama. We need help. And what better entity than the government to rescue us? So we need some new rules so that Americans can be better controlled. Now, I've got some great ideas from Richard King Daley, Mayor of Chicago, who has decided in his newest stab at gun control, we need to institute mandated firearms training classes for every Chicago gun owner, as well as costly yearly annual licensing fees. This is a brilliant idea, so much so I think we can expand on this idea in order to have a better, more orderly society. Plainly, Daley and his Democrat cohorts need to implement these training mandates on a wider basis. Not only will we have a better trained citizenry, but we'll have billions of dollars flowing through the treasury from the high fees that such classes must invariably entail. Any jobs? Why think of how many jobs will be created by these new policies? Well, we'll need millions of low-level perfunctory clerks, classroom instructors, and paper pushers to get all of this stuff off the ground. And what could be better then more education and more money in the form of hidden taxes going to fill the pockets of government officials? So since we've already decided that citizens observing their constitutional rights will be forced to pay expensive fees and take costly classes to own a gun, we need to look elsewhere to see where this idea can work as well as it does for the Second Amendment. How about the First Amendment? Sensible new media control laws would mandate that newspapermen must take literacy and writing classes in order to work at a newspaper. Not only that, but newspaper buyers should be held to one paper a month. After all, the idea and those papers are very, very dangerous, and being exposed to too many ideas is not good for the safety and comfort of government officials. As to religion, heck, what other idea has been as dangerous as that? Therefore, we need government classes to train anyone that wants to go to church. We also need to thoroughly license ministers and pastors. These people need to be answerable fully to the government for every thought that they, and every one of their uttered words. After all, religion can be very dangerous, right? The government has a vested interest in making sure that a religion control makes things safe for police and firemen when they go into homes of churchgoers. And protest marches have been well known to be a hotbed of subversive activity. It is obvious that anyone that should ever want to attend a protest of any kind must take government classes to train them how to best observe their God-given rights to offer redress to government. And those that organize protests need to be licensed too. Also, no organizer should be allowed to live in any sizable city. It's for your safety. You got it? Now, I know that that voting isn't necessarily right, but we do need more controls on it. So no one should be allowed to vote unless they get a license and attend voting literacy classes every year to better train them for the ballot box. I can't see this being too expensive. Maybe classes for, I don't know, $100 a session and a voting license costing $50 for each general election. Now, that's not really bad, is it? Yes, I see a host of rights that government can make money off of in the best Chicago way, and this is a gold mine that is yet to be tapped. Congressional Democrats have had a wonderful knack of naming new laws in an Orwellian fashion of late. We have the Employee Free Choice Act that squelches free speech, or the Disclosure Act that doesn't require as much disclosure for some folks as it does for others. We've had the Freedom of Choice Act that excludes the choice of living for a baby. Well, we can call this new idea the BEST Act. This would be the Bill for Enforcing Societal Training Act. I mean, that's what's best for all of us, right? Mayor Richard the King Daley and the Democrat Party are genius. My head is off to him. It really is. Now, the foregoing was a piece written by an op-ed journalist, published in Chicago. Couldn't agree with them more. We really need to start regulating everything else, right? If we're going to allow them to regulate the guns, why aren't they regulating everything else? It's like reverse discrimination. It's like reverse racism. Stay tuned, guys. Plenty more to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, in my new hour right here on 2A Radio.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right, welcome back from the break, everyone. Welcome back. On the line, I'd like to introduce a fellow by the name of Mark Butler, who wrote a book, and it was just published a few weeks ago, by the name of Freedom Now: Breaking Free from the Ups and Downs of Conditioned Living. Mark, welcome to 2A Radio.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Now, I understand, Mark, you are out on the road promoting your book. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm actually headed down to the Phoenix area. I'll be coming through Las Vegas. I've got a book signing, talk, and discussion planned in Mesa next week on the Wednesday the 21st. One plan in Scottsdale on the 22nd. Then I come back up to the Las Vegas area, and I will be in Vegas Saturday the 24th of July next week at the Holiday Inn 6220 South Rainbow. And I'm going to have a talk book signing at 11 a.m. there and one at 1:30.
Well, now that's good. That's the Holiday Inn Express on South Rainbow, and that is March 24th, a week from this coming Saturday. A week from tomorrow is what we're looking at. And if that's the case, I will get together my local Pahrump in Las Vegas cadre to come down there and see you. Tell us a little bit about the adaptation of your book and really what it's about and why it's good for freedom-loving people. And you know, I guess before I ask that, Mark, I should give the listening audience a little bit of a background on you. You live in Idaho, which is an incredibly freedom-loving state. And you say you're on your way down to Phoenix right now, which is yet another huge freedom-loving state. So tell us about kind of the freedom-minded background from you and what you allude to, or don't even allude to, really, what you actually get at in the book.
Yeah, well, Bill, what the book gets at is this inner freedom. And the way I relate it to your show is that, you know, if you look at the pilgrims and the original folks who left their tyrannical government control, what, almost 400 years ago now, 300 to 400 years ago?
Yes.
There was initially an inner spirit within those people that wanted to be able to be self-responsible, to express themselves the way they wanted to. They wanted freedom of speech. They wanted to be able to do things they wanted to do. And that spirit is what the book gets back to. It gets back to trying to rekindle that inner spirit of seeing how individually I need to be more responsible first. I need to start looking there and seeing where I can find spots where maybe my thoughts have tyrannized me, my emotions have tyrannized me, and start working there to free ourselves from those things.
Now, it sounds as though you're getting at the aspect of, I don't want to have a bunch of government oversight or a bunch of government control in my life. I can handle this on my own. Just stay at bay, which is essentially what the Constitution is a control on government, which has been nothing but buffaloed and railroaded over the last couple hundred years. So it sounds like it's getting back to that basic mindset of those who colonized this great country.
Hey, think of this. What's strong and courageous is the spirit to defend our own inner freedom, defend our country. That's what this country was founded upon. What's not strong, what's self-harming, is the spirit to demand what I want, no matter what. And that's what it seems like we're starting to see much more in this country, is people demanding unearned benefits. That's completely contrary to the initial desires of the people that founded the country, at least the way I view it, where the demand was to defend self-responsibility. And this book gets to the inner part of that. You know, where do I need to defend more of my own personal responsibility? And so it ties in great with your show, and I think it will connect well with your listeners.
You know, I would absolutely agree with you, Mark, because we talk about these things. As a matter of fact, we hit hard on those things on the annual Independence Day show and some of the other special shows throughout the year as well. And on a daily note, we hear all about American society now. We're second and in some cases third generation of people who are of the what can the government provide me and where is mine? I've done nothing more than been born, and because I was born and I was born in this country, the government owes me something. And what they seem to completely neglect to understand is this. The government owns absolutely nothing that they don't take from someone else. Is that not the case? I mean, they don't grow anything. They don't create anything. All they do is they take away from the class of people in this country who are actually doing things and creating things and having this society actually run. The real-life industrial and agricultural workforce behind this nation and even the intellect behind this nation to create those sorts of things, the government has to take away from those people and those industries and those groups in order to provide this free ride welfare system, which has gotten so massively overblown, especially in the last 18 months since the current backside has been sitting his a-hole down in the Oval Office. And this is exactly the type of mentality which has been nothing but flourished and nourished for the last year and a half in this country.
Yeah, now doesn't it lead to the thought of, or the word complacency? You know, and again, I like to connect everything to the inward because that's what my book's about, but you change yourself inwardly, it reflects outwardly, and it connects with your audience. Complacency. Look at the country. It's the people who've come here. They left tyranny. They didn't know what they were coming to. These people could have died on the ocean. They didn't really know what was going to be out here. Look at how many of the pilgrims died when they even came here. But they didn't care. They would go through whatever pain they had to go through to find freedom. They were brave. They risked. And then this country was founded on that freedom. And now, though, it seems like, and you can go back several years, not just to the 18 months, even though the 18 months have been extremely changing as far as this country goes, but you can go back to the 60s and even further back if you want to get into that, but we've gotten into a state of complacency, and then the society is now starting to demand, and has been for some time, demand more and more and more from the government, and that's not what we were founded upon. Now, how do we connect that inwardly? Where am I complacent with my own self? Where am I complacent with my thoughts? Where am I complacent with my depressions, my angers? For instance, I'll give you a good example. I watch the news, and I blow up. I start screaming at those people on the TV screen, and I get frustrated and angry, and I burn myself. Now, what am I doing to myself if I become complacent with my own angers? And how can I rechannel that to be productive, not only for myself, but for the country? And this book gets to that.
You know, Mark, it sounds like you really have opened up a positive Pandora's box when it comes to this book. You know, it's interesting. It was John F. Kennedy that stood up and said, ask not what you can do, what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And he is the same guy that his administration decided, you know what, in order for the ideals of the liberals to get into society and really take control and take this country where we want it to, we have to start at the grade school level and work all the way through. And in 2 to 3 generations, we will have this country. And that's exactly what happened in November of 2008 when we elected Barack Obama. And when Barack Obama took office, it's been about 18 months now, and never in history has an otherwise productive and free society gone further and faster towards fascist socialism without some sort of revolution or overthrow of the existing government. This was by freely elected people who manipulated the system to get into office and have taken us this far, this fast. And it sounds as though, because right now, I really kind of describe today's society, Mark, as kind of like a football field after a big home game win, where everybody's crowded the field. At the end of the day, what's really been happening here in the United States is everybody's either managed to get off to one side of the field or off to the other side of the field. There are either securely off to the left or securely off to the right. There's not nearly as many people in the middle as there used to be. There seems to be a huge decisive difference here in the United States. And it sounds like your book is really geared towards those people who have really ended up over on the right side and realized, look, we've got a serious problem here. And part of that problem comes from the way that people have been educated and the way that they are viewing society and this free welfare sort of system. What can I do to help myself and try to help these other people see what the problem is? Am I getting there, Mark?
Oh, yeah, you're right on. Hey, you know, you brought up something that the book touches on, and if I could say so, if somebody would go to YouTube, if your listeners would go to YouTube and type in Mark L. Butler, there's a 5-minute video will come up, and here's one of the things that they'll see on there is, I talk about masks, how people wear masks, and think about how this country has become so, how so many people in this country have become so fooled by masks. And what I mean by that is somebody with a very eloquent gift of gab what the heck? Just because you can talk really talk smoothly, does that mean you're going to do something great for our country? Look at all the criticism about strategery and stuff like that when George Bush was in, how even the comedy makes fun of the way people talk and discredits that. The way people talk shouldn't have anything to do with their spirit and what they stand for. And we've become fooled by masks. The people in this country, you know, they swallow hook, line, and sinker somebody who has a great performance. What do they really stand for? That's a good question to ask. And then we have to look again, as my book always gets to, look at our own masks, how we might be putting on masks ourselves, and break free from that first.
You know, Mark, I like how you put that, because quite honestly, the United States is one country which is absolutely not steeped in tradition. As a matter of fact, most of Europe is not steeped in tradition. You ask those questions about the mask, and, you know, to be able to offer up someone who speaks well and talks about change, we could introduce Karl Marx and Adolf Hitler, who ran on the similar platforms. But still, countries that are not steeped in their tradition. You want to talk about steeped in tradition, just different countries which are much slower and understand where they came from. You have to look to the Far East. You look at China, you look at Japan, you look at the people of Taiwan. You look at these different places around the country where you have thousands and thousands of years of the same sort of society that evolves very, very slowly, and everyone understands where their history came from. America's memory is about as long as a grain of rice. I mean, you go to talk to people about 9/11 just 2 years after it happened.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, and most people, after 2 years, they don't even remember much about 9/11, let alone what happened in Europe just in the last century, where we saw smooth-talking, mask-wearing scumbags come in, take control, and take entire nations and entire regions of different, you know, different parts of the planet just straight down the tubes.
Yeah, why don't we research more? Why don't we study more? I like that thing that you just said about what our memories are about as long as a grain of rice, or is that what you said?
That's exactly what I said.
Look at one generation doesn't know what the previous generation knew and what the previous generation knew. And I'm not saying, and I know you're not either, Bill, saying that we need to live in our past and just be, you know, so sentimental about how great it was, and then maybe so angry about how it is now. I think what you're saying, and what this book is even trying to say too, is, hey, why not look at the past to see how we can use the past to continue our freedom now, to be free now, to have the strengths that were held in the past, to have them now. And knowledge is important, don't you think? And it doesn't seem like people are very interested, and I'm not meaning to say people, everybody, but a lot of people I meet, you watch Jay Leno, for instance, it doesn't seem like people are very interested in finding out about the past.
No, they don't.
And the courage is that, or the courage is are then discredited. You know, new writings come about, and they discredit somebody who we thought for years was courageous. Well, you know, in a sense, what's important for you and I, whether somebody was courageous or wasn't, for you and I think what's important is for us to be inwardly courageous, whatever that means to you, Bill, whatever it means to me. That's what's important.
Mark,
but we need the past and the understanding of the past to help that.
I couldn't agree with you more. We need to know more about the past. I found it very comical. I saw a video of a guy interviewing people at Berkeley, California, at the college there, and asking them who their favorite president in history was, and they undoubtedly said Abe Lincoln. And then when he informed them that he was the first president from the Republican Party, they all got stupefied, like, oh my God, there's no way I could like a Republican, but I like him in history. So you're absolutely right when it comes to this. Mark, I appreciate you coming on the air today.
Yep.
Guys, again, it's Mark Butler, Freedom Now, Breaking Free from the Ups and Downs of Conditioned Living. Mark, do you have a website, or where can we find this book quickly before we head into break?
Quickly, eaglelit.org, eaglelit.org.
Eaglelit.org, eaglelit.org. Mark, thank you so much for calling in. I will see you on the 24th here in Las Vegas, and I will bring some folks with me. So I hope you're looking forward to seeing us too.
Thank you, Bill. We'll see you then. Thank you very much.
Great, Mark. All right, everybody, stay tuned. There's more to come, and I'll be right back. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
All right, folks, welcome back. Now, most all of you know, I used to be a cop. And, you know, cops have a badge number, or like Las Vegas Metro, you don't have a badge number. You have what's called a P number, a personnel number. There is no number on the actual badge. You can look at the back of the badge. There's a little serial number on the back, but that's not anything to do with you. So you have a personnel number. Well, a lot of them go by the badge number. NYPD's famous. They got the badge number right there. Anyhow, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a police officer by the name of Jeff Overcash did not appreciate a citizen asking for his name and badge number, like many cops. So what did he do? He placed the guy under arrest, as many cops will do on a regular basis. This guy, who was arrested, didn't like what Officer Jeff Overcash was doing. So he wanted to file a complaint. So he went up to him and he asked him, he says, "I'd like to have your name and badge number." So what did the cop do? He arrested him. But this time, the citizen's girlfriend was videotaping the interaction, audio and video, and the tape led to Overcash having to resign rather than face termination, according to the Broward Palm Beach New Times. And why did he have to resign? Why was he facing termination? For violation of the citizen's rights. Now, of course, by resignation, this also means that Overcash will most likely pop up at any other number of neighboring police agencies in South Florida because he wasn't fired. So remember the name, Overcash. And never hesitate to film a cop if you feel something's not kosher, because the Supreme Court has ruled, in many cases, that you have no right to privacy out in the public domain. You have a right to privacy in your home. You have some reasonable rights, which in some cases are unreasonable excuses against, to privacy in your home. I'm sorry, in your car. But you have a reasonable right to privacy in your home. Out in the public, you do not. Okay? So if anybody says, like the whole thing in Maryland, oh, you can't film a cop. Okay. If a cop's in a parking lot and getting filmed by security cameras, are they now guilty of some crime? The company that owns the security cameras, the security camera themselves? Can you go put cuffs on a security camera, or the security person who's watching this? Is that what's going on? God, I hope not. Anyhow, that's what's going on in Florida. That guy's out of a job. Hopefully, he won't get another one. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll be back tomorrow.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress,
the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.